Abbotsford's halfway between Calgary and Vancouver. Bet you didn't know that.
It's not.
Not
it's
geographically.
Not.
Well, it's not geographically halfway, but it is for our show purpose today.
Maybe in the fact that, Scott, if there's a couple of accidents on Highway 1 out of Vancouver, and then you've got the Langley construction area for our Vancouver listeners that know the backup there, it could take you sometimes from Vancouver to get to Abbotsford, maybe just as long as Abbotsford to take you to Calgary at some point. So that's a valid point.
Yeah, so I'm not saying geographically. I'm just saying from a story point of view, Abbotsford is now in the middle of Vancouver and Calgary. And we're going to have somebody join us in just a couple minutes who has great perspective on this, because news came down yesterday that the Vancouver Canucks are doing what a lot of teams in the West have done in recent years. They're moving their farm team back to this side of the continent. And for places like the Flames and the Oilers, they've done that in California. Seattle's going to have its farm team in California. Vancouver's going to do it a little closer to home, and they're going to do it in the same place that Calgary did. Because AHL hockey, while they said it's intended, you don't put out a statement like that if you don't think this thing's getting done. Nobody can say it's done, but it's going to get done, which means Abbotsford will soon be able to say it's home to, or it's been home to Calgary's AHL team and Vancouver's AHL team. The Heat, they were there. Ryan Pinder's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. And this is what connects the two markets. Ryan is a morning show host in Calgary, for those who don't know. And he's now on the line. Ryan is also the former play-by-play voice and media relations person for the Abbotsford Heat. Did a couple of seasons there, and he joins us from the other side of the Rockies. What's going on, Pinder? How are you?
Good. How are you, Scotty? What's happening?
Well, as you know, and I'm loving the memories that must have come flooding back to you, and that's where I want to start. When it got announced yesterday that the Canucks intend to move their AHL team to Abbotsford, as the former play-by-play voice of the Abbotsford Heat, what is the first memory that came flooding back?
Oh, man. Like, I don't know if there's one, but, like, there's a whole bunch. I remember when the Oklahoma City Barons came in with Eberle and Hall and Justin Schultz, who won Defenseman of the Year that year. I remember the hype around Sven Berchi and TJ Brody, who were Flames prospects at that time. But more than anything, I think I really remember just waiting in airport gates and, like, sitting on buses and losing time zones. It was a war those couple of years. We had over 110 days on the road in a six-month season. It was wild.
Now, Ryan, we know attendance was an issue at times, but I was actually at that series. That was a Friday night, Saturday night. Oklahoma City Barons were playing the Heat, and I went to it again because Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, saw Nugent's mom in the stands, and I don't know if you know, but I'm an Oilers fan. So seeing those guys play in Abbotsford, like, I'm going to go do it. Scotty's like, no, the rink must have been empty, right? I remember it being a pretty good atmosphere for that game. Am I correct in that, or maybe I had too many beers at the game?
Well, there was, I think it was $2 Sleemans they had as a promotion. So that, there could have been some of that there. But no, that was probably one of the higher water marks of the franchise. Obviously, when the Chicago Wolves came through, which was Vancouver's affiliate, that was always a big, big event. And, like, let's not dance around it, tiptoe around it. They were wearing Flames colors in a suburb of Vancouver. Like, there are people that were employed by the Flames that thought that was a good idea. That's crazy. You know, they did struggle with attendance, and you know, as you probably would expect they would, but anytime Chicago came in, it was big, and 12-13 was the lockout year, so I believe it was an abbreviated 48-game season that they ended up getting. So before that happened, Edmonton was the ticket. When Oklahoma City passed through, that was big time, and that was a big deal, and those were good crowds, and there was some good crowds sometimes, but you had the same team typically playing two game sets back to back or two times in three nights. And there's just, like, how do you get excited when you see Charlotte visit, or when it's, oh, now it's San Antonio? I mean, no one in Abbotsford has been to these places. Most of us haven't been to these places. I never would have been to these places if not for working in the league. There was no Victoria. There wasn't an Idaho. There wasn't a team from Washington. And I think while it's got to be exciting for a Canucks fan to see the next generation, or I guess the wave of prospects coming, travel's still going to be a nightmare. Like, there was not a team within two time zones when I worked there. There are lots of teams in the Pacific time zone now, but there's no direct flights. You can't fly from Abbotsford to San Diego. There's no, you know, subway underground that travels 300 miles an hour that takes you to Bakersfield. You're still probably driving to YVR for an hour, and you're probably going to have to be 2.5 hours early because it's an international flight. You'll go to San Francisco and take an hour to load a bus and sit on a freeway and or hop another flight. It's interesting that they're doing it. I think from a revenue perspective, it'll be good, but I think it's going to be a tough sell on player development with the amount of travel time they'll still have to deal with.
Yeah, that's the downside. And they've obviously said, well, getting players back and forth between the two clubs in Vancouver and whatever they call the Abbotsford franchise, whether it's the Canucks or they go with something else, that is more important to us, and engaging our fan base is more important to us than whatever travel miles these players and these coaches are going to have to log at the minor league level. You said it earlier, like they were wearing Flames jerseys, and from a fan engagement standpoint, it didn't make a lot of sense. But from a financial standpoint and from a geography standpoint, I completely understand why the Calgary Flames said, yeah, we'll do it, because the city of Abbotsford is guaranteeing us that we'll make at least $5.7 million every single year.
Yeah, in revenue. They would cover any revenue shortfalls. And it wasn't the Flames that owned the franchise, but they had a relationship with Lane Sweeting, who was the businessman that headed that ownership group that was based in Abbotsford. It was not a good setup. I think the city, first off, lost a fair amount of money building that rink. And then in order to get an anchor tenant, had to get a deal like that to get it in place. So if things didn't meet revenue projections, well, the city was covering it. It was a pretty rough deal for Abbotsford. And I know there's been many a flirtation with the Canucks since the Flames affiliate left, but nice to see finally something that I think fans will snuggle up with from the area in terms of like relating to the team, and hopefully financially it works better for everyone, including the city of Abbotsford that spent a lot of money on that rink that's been sitting without a primary tenant for a while.
Ryan Pinder is the host of the morning show in Calgary at 960, and he's the former play-by-play voice of the Abbotsford Heat. He joins us here today on Rintoul and Sermon. So you get the promotion from the BCHL to the AHL. You go from the Penticton Vs to the Abbotsford Heat. Once you got there, did it always feel like you were fighting an uphill battle because of the sweater, because of the affiliation with the Flames?
Well, to be honest, it was probably before. Like, I was really excited about the job. There's a big difference between traveling to Williams Lake and Port Alberni then going to Chicago and Toronto and, you know, Houston and Austin. I was very excited on a personal standpoint, but I don't think you could have looked at it and said, oh, it's going to work. It's just a matter of time. It quite honestly felt like the opposite. Like it was an inevitability that it wouldn't work, but that it was going to be a good opportunity career-wise while it was there. And there was a lot of people that were great that I worked with in the organization, and its failure to last, I don't think was any shortcoming of anyone that worked for the team so much as what we laid out at the start, which was, you know, people thought it was a good idea to put a uniform with something affiliated to fire in Flames colors in the Vancouver Canucks backyard. Like, they thought that would work, or they just didn't care if it would work and they knew they wouldn't lose money. So either way, it kind of felt like you were on the Titanic, but man, it was good living for your career as long as that thing was above water.
What were the dynamics of who was coming to the games? I know obviously you said it wasn't exactly highly attended, but like, was it more family situations that you were seeing?
That's a good question, Karen. I don't know that it would have been terribly different than any other hockey crowd in the sense that, like, yeah, we had a kids section, we had a rowdy, you know, $2 beer section, we had loges and suites, and I wasn't really on the sales side at all, so I can't speak to the breakdown, but it wasn't terribly different than any of the other organizations I worked for, with I guess the exception of Penticton, because that's such a retirement mecca, so we had an older demo when I worked there. But it was I think generally speaking, it was a tough sell to the average hockey fan that, you know, just wants to watch the Canucks on Sportsnet Pacific and was really into what was happening with the Canucks. You got to be a little more hardcore to get into the, oh, Darren Haydar's here, and, you know, here comes XYZ prospect from a team that's in the Eastern Conference. There was a lot of good players that passed through there and a lot of future All-Stars, and we know the numbers on the AHL. Around 90% of NHLers at least participate in a few games in the league, but it's just, you got to be so hardcore to be on it at that point. I really think it was kind of neat to see the media that got to come out and cover, because they're really keen, hardworking people that use that as a footstep to covering NHL teams. Like, I remember Kevin Woodley, who we chat with a bunch here, and I know you guys do as well, from In Goal Magazine. It was an opportunity for him to come out and chat with all the goalie prospects that would come through. Jacob Markstrom was with the San Antonio Rampage at that point and was a Florida prospect still. For the Canucks, it was Eddie Lack in Chicago. Lack actually outdueled Markstrom in a playoff series, which seems wild at this point. It was that sort of stuff. And people in media have gone up to cover the Canucks. And even photographers that worked there that were doing some cutting edge stuff, hanging in the rafters and shooting above nets and stuff, they really got themselves on the map there. So I don't know that it wasn't more of an opportunity for those who worked in the business rather than fans of the sport.
Okay, so the next hard-hitting question that I have for you, Ryan, is there anywhere where Utica Comets players, Abbotsford, whatever players playing there can get in trouble, though? Like, this is Abbotsford, right? Like, is there, like, the one place where you're going to find the players at, or is this a pretty safe place to throw potential NHLers?
Well, you know what? We traveled in big numbers, and when we traveled, it was for long spells of time. So, for example, if we had a two-game set in Cleveland, we would leave Wednesday. We wouldn't get back till late Sunday. So for two games, boom, you're gone for that long. And then you'd be wiped out by the time you're back. You get a couple practices, you'd play a home set, and you'd be gone again. So there really wasn't a lot of downtime there. And, you know, I don't know. Like, Abbotsford's known for a lot of things, and you're also really close to Vancouver. I guess if guys wanted to, I know some guys, like, there were some local players on the team, like Ben Walter, who I believe lived in Langley, and he would drive out from there. And I don't know. It was not teams weren't itching to get to Abbotsford necessarily, but that said, it also wasn't winter. One year we were in a division with Hamilton and Toronto and Lake Erie and Grand Rapids, and that year was much less popular travel trips than the one we were in the same division as Houston, San Antonio, Austin, and Charlotte. So, yes, a team that was like 200 miles off the Atlantic coast was in the same division as a team 100 kilometers off the Pacific coast. Fun league.
Abbotsford, now the tie that binds between the Canucks and the Flames. Ryan Pinder joining us here on Rentoul and Sermon. The other AHL conversation piece that we have right now with Calgary and Vancouver is that we're at a point of the season for both teams where they're using guys who are playing in the AHL, or we want to see guys who are playing in the NHL to find out what they might be for next season. It's been an ultra-disappointing year in Calgary. Same can be said in Vancouver. Which team has the tougher task of turning things around in short order?
Oh, I mean, I guess it depends how you view the task. If the task is to lose as many games between now and the end of the year to get a higher pick, Vancouver's been doing a good job. They've lost six in a row. We've kind of been clamoring for them to start someone not named Jacob Markstrom here so that they can pick somewhere like 6, 7, 8 rather than 11, 12, 13. It's kind of like avoid that peak sadness. Get into the playoffs or get a high pick. But long term, there's not a lot of bad money on the Flames roster, but there isn't top-end superstars. And the closest thing to one is probably Gaudreau, who's got a five-team trade list, a 27 no trade list, 2017 no trade list, five only, that kicks in this offseason. So that's going to force the issue on whether they want to extend him and or shop around and see what they could get for him. So I don't know. They're very different predicaments. Like, I have a really tough time looking at Vancouver's cap and making sense of it. The bottom half of that roster is really expensive. But the Flames, on the flip side, it's like you play in this North Division. Like, who are your best two forwards? And where would they slot on Toronto or Winnipeg or Vancouver or Edmonton? Like, it's all of a sudden, you don't look like you got much skill at all for a team that is a pretty similar group to the one that won the West 2 years ago. So they're both challenging, no question. And I think the real question in Calgary here is, are you willing to go through short-term pain to turn this thing around quicker and become a contender again? Or are you saying, hey, we just hired Daryl Sutter. He's got 2 years left, and we're committed to trying to win with this group without major surgery. Maybe it's one or two core pieces. Maybe it's Giordano via the expansion draft and a Gaudreau trade where you're not taking futures but current players back. I don't know. I don't see clear direction here. And do we even know that Treliving's absolutely the guy that gets to make those decisions? I don't think Daryl would come back without some influence on player personnel decisions. And they haven't won. This core hasn't won. In 2015, they got to the second round and got pumped by the Ducks. That's it. That is it. And that's not good enough for a group that, when you looked at it, they were all on relatively team-friendly contracts. Giordano wins a Norris at less than $7 million. You had Johnny Gaudreau at under $7 million. Sean Monahan 30 every year, it seemed, until recently, less than $7 million. Like it looked like a pretty well-built roster for a while.
Well, and here's the other commonality I see between the two clubs. While they have to do different things to their rosters to get them going in the right direction, the challenge of being creative this offseason is the exact same one. Like, how creative can you get right now with what you need to do? The fact that there's a Seattle expansion draft coming, there's teams that are going to be in an expansion draft protection list crunch. How creative can you get in the next few months to turn things around?
Yeah, for sure. And for Vancouver, are you comfortable with the amount of cap space you have? Do you feel like if there was ever a situation where an offer sheet might make sense, wouldn't it be Seattle out of the gate if you could think you could bring in a superstar? I mean, it seems like teams are in as difficult a spot financially as they've ever been in terms of cap, never mind the finances themselves behind the cap. I was really surprised that it didn't happen to Cirelli or Sergachev in or Chernak in Tampa this past offseason. Kind of disappointed, to be honest, like, because that would have been spicy and fun. It didn't, but does Seattle care? Are they worried about offending other GMs? Is Ron Francis worried about burning a bridge, or is he worried about being competitive in year one? I think Vancouver's susceptible to that. Calgary, not so much, but I think we've learned anything the last few years. If you have cap space, don't feel obliged to go spend it immediately. If you can pull a Carolina Hurricanes, we'll take Patrick Marleau, buy him out for you. You give us a first rounder. Like, those are the types of deals that I think can help a team in the middle get closer to the top.
Ryan, we saw Milan Lucic, the report yesterday from Eric Francis that he's going to waive his no-trade clause to be unprotected in terms, if that's what Calgary wants to do in terms of Seattle expansion draft. Apparently that was verbally agreed upon when he came to Calgary. Does that change anything that Calgary's going to do?
No, because I think it was the expectation from the moment he arrived from Edmonton. He has a no-move and has had a no-move with that deal signed by Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton, the 7-year contract, the same infamous offseason of Louis Erickson and David Backes and Andrew Ladd and Franz Nielsen and many other poor decisions, James Neal. So I think when that deal, which took a while to come together, and I don't think it was a coincidence that it was after a signing bonus got paid to Lucic that deal went through, that was part of those conversations, is what everyone would hint, but no one can say officially, because of course you can't waive your no move until the season of the expansion draft. But I believe that was part of the whole dialogue that would have occurred between Calgary, Lucic, Edmonton, and that dialogue towards that deal. So I don't think anyone's been operating under the assumption that you'd have to use one of your shells, so to speak, to cover Lucic. And, you know, if you go to the websites that'll allow you to do the mock Seattle thing, I think the most common inputs are the ones that don't have Milan covered, which means you've clicked the he's waived his right thing. So it doesn't change anything, and they're in a pretty good spot. The only thing I'll say is they could lose a top four defenseman if Seattle wants one. They're probably not going to expose Chris Tanev, given how solid he's been and that they just signed him. And the youngsters, Rasmus Anderson and Noah Hanifin, are right in their primes and on team-friendly deals on salary-wise. It would be weird, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Mark Giordano was out there and available. And it would be really tough also if you're the Flames to say, oh, we can't lose this guy. We've done so much winning. Look at all the success we've had with Giordano. I mean, he's been great. He's won a Norris, but it just hasn't come together. So I don't think you're in a spot where you can say, here's a second rounder, or here's our best prospect in the minors. We have to keep Gio. I think it's a group that we're already expecting a culture change for. Maybe the expansion draft does it for you.
And unless you can do some wheeling and dealing with that forward group in advance, you're not going with the 4-4 model of protecting skaters.
No, they don't want to lose Dubé, who, you know, a Kelowna Rocket and a speedy guy that's from the area that had a really good playoff last year in the bubble. Mangiapane's quietly become one of their most dependable forwards. They really like, you know, what Lindholm's given them down the middle in his first year as a full-time centerman. The only other thing with the forward group, Scotty, is that is there a move of Monahan and or Gaudreau before the expansion draft? Because it does feel like one of those guys being gone this summer is a very, very likely outcome.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people wondering if both of them will be gone. One last question for you about Seattle and the expansion. There's going to be pressure on Vancouver for a bunch of different reasons with Seattle coming in, and people in Vancouver are excited about the rivalry and finally having a geographical rival. And you know this, people in this market in Vancouver, they like Seattle as a city anyway. They want to go down there. They want to see hockey down there when they're in that city. Is there any pressure on the Calgary Flames or other Canadian teams in this division because of Seattle coming into the league?
Ooh, so it'd only be Calgary and Edmonton that are divisional rivals because Winnipeg likely slots back into the Central.
Yeah.
I mean, this is assuming that the world heals and we can go to Mariners games in the summer and things
yes.
like that, right? That'd be good. I'll sign up for that, please. I think it's Vancouver. I don't really see much else in the sense that, like, Edmonton's a pretty top-heavy roster with some big free agents. You know, if they're going to re-up some of their UFAs, like what they've got Larson and Barry, they're a year away from Nurse. They could extend him this summer. I don't know. I feel like it's Vancouver. And if you're Ron Francis, is there a team you're going to be more difficult on if you're trying to cut side deals than the Vancouver Canucks? Like, is there a team that you don't want to stick it to more immediately out of the gate than the Canucks? It's got to be. It's not a rivalry if people don't care. I think absolutely Seattle will do everything in their power to hurt the Canucks the most if they can, because that's what's going to make it great. And, like, welcome aboard, Vancouver fans. You're going to love it. You're going to hate it. It's going to make your blood boil. You know, growing up in Alberta, I got to watch Calgary-Edmonton growing up. If you're in Eastern Canada, you get the Habs and the Leafs. And even for a while, Ottawa-Toronto was a thing where they met in the playoffs. Battle of Pennsylvania. Like, this is going to be one of the great rivalries in hockey if it turns out as well as we want it to. And part of that is absolutely being a Richard to your neighbor, your rival.
Yeah, I hope so. And there's a lot of people that think maybe the head coach is the centerpiece of that rivalry.
That'd be great.
Yep.
I've speculated
that for a long time, and who knows?
Maybe the goalie coach, right? The goalie coach doesn't have a deal yet. They could go get a veteran goalie. Sure, why not? Worked for Vegas.
It worked out all right for Vegas, yeah, and they're still doing okay. Pinder, thanks for the time, man. Get some sleep.
Yeah, nap's been pushed, but anytime, Scotty, Karen, nice chatting with you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan. That is Ryan Pinder, morning show host, former play-by-play voice of the Abbotsford Heat. He does think it's going to work for the Abbotsford franchise, whatever they end up being called. He thinks it's going to work. Yeah, there's some logistical issues with flying to away games and travel and all of those sorts of things, but the Canucks have bet on the upside of fan engagement, full arena, better to get our players back and forth between the two clubs.
Well, here's the thing, Scott. It's a 2.5-hour flight from Stockton to Calgary. It's a 3-hour flight from Edmonton to Bakersfield. Like, I think these farm teams enjoy those two organizations enjoy the fact that it's, maybe one time zone, but it's one flight. It's not a full day travel trip. Like, Utica to Vancouver was 2 flights. You had to either go through Toronto or Chicago. You had to drive, once you got to Utica, you had to drive another hour and a bit. So it's a full-on 10-hour day. And if you're flying to Utica, you're losing time, you're coming back, you're probably going to have to try and recall someone a day or two before. But if there's emergency recall, at least someone's closer. So I think this is definitely going to work for the Vancouver Canucks. I also think the fact, too, and this is the reason I asked him about the demographics in the games that he saw, because I think they're going to try to definitely attract the Valley. And they're going to try to attract young fans and young families that maybe can't afford to get to Vancouver, because we know how hard it is to get into the city. We know how hard it is and expensive it can be to go to a Vancouver Canucks games in terms of not just tickets, but popcorn and drinks and all that kind of things that go with it. Parking as well, Scott. So I do think that Vancouver sees this as a way to generate young fans and get them to games to see young players that could be on the Canucks roster.
Haven't seen the reaction out of the WHL. Can't imagine they're thrilled. Can't imagine they're thrilled in the WHL in this part of the province. But Vancouver Canucks are doing what's best for them. That's what Seattle's going to do as well. I think there's a lot of pressure on Vancouver because of Seattle. I think there's a lot of pressure on Vancouver next year on a bunch of different levels. Not like, okay, you've got to be better than Seattle in the standings. I think that's one of the inherent conversation points that comes up. But there's way more than that. It's game presentation. It's about competing against the shiny new toy. It's about who ends up there. Do members of the coaching staff? Does the entire coaching staff? Like, there's a lot of potential stories that we'll be talking about in the fall.
Like, worst case scenario, Scott. Like, let's just put this out there. And Vancouver fans are probably like, okay, we've had so much bad happen to us and our organization. Like, could you imagine? Travis Green's the head coach. Ian Clark is the goaltending coach. And he takes somebody that was good and makes them great. They offer sheet someone, one of your young players, so you're forced to match that offer sheet and pay them more than you wanted to. Like, could you imagine that actually goes down? Like, Vancouver will be sitting there going, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? And let's say they make the playoffs and we make a run at the Stanley Cup. Like, come on. Like, what could happen, Scott, on the realm of bad things that could go wrong? Like, I mean, I'm just putting it out there to be like the worst case scenario, but man, I mean, you could write up a few worst case scenarios when it comes to Seattle and Vancouver.
Yeah, there's only one young player that falls into that offer sheet category. His name's Elias Pettersson. I don't see it happening, but there's always potential. But we wish for this every year as hockey fans. We wish for it single year, and it just doesn't happen. We will get into Take the L. Maybe there's something you've heard during the course of the show. Maybe there's something you've seen in sports this week. Take the L and Karen's Olympic dream coming your way next on Rental and Sermon. Like, look at Michael Hauser. If Michael Hauser had given up on his dream 5 years ago, when probably people said, buddy, you're never getting above the ECHL, the writing's on the wall, why don't you get started on the next part of your career? Well, then we don't get the great sports story that we get out of the Buffalo Sabres this week.
Exactly. You should always have a dream, Scott. And you know, if you have that dream, don't let anyone quash it for you. You know, like, go after it. I have a dream.
I know you do. And I'm a little surprised at what your dream is. And I will do my best not to quash it for you, though I do feel like relevant questions need to be asked. So yesterday, you texted after the show to myself and Jamie Dodd, producer of this program, who hopefully will join us at some point this segment, maybe for Take the L, maybe for something before that. You texted me about training for the Olympics, because we were talking about DK Metcalf at the end of the show yesterday, how he's going to try out, that the U.S. Track Association has invited him to come try to qualify for the Olympics. And he said, okay, let's go. Now, DK Metcalf does things that are very related to the Olympic sport he is going to try to qualify in. So I'm not sure why you want to train for the Olympics, but I am willing to hear you out.
Well, my thought was, Scott, like, let's have some fun with this. Like, what sport out there in the Olympics? I'm going to go with, it can be summer or winter, but I feel like I maybe would have more success with something in the summer. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm short. Like, I'm 5'4". I got little legs. They don't, you know, they're not exactly sprinting legs. They're not exactly jumping legs. Like, there's things that I am limited in skill set because of my height. Also, maybe because of my physical fitness at this time. But, you know. So I'm thinking, what can I do? I'm short. Okay. Gymnastics, you know, think of like a Mary Lou Retton. Okay. Like, she was short. She was barely 5 feet. You know, she could fly through the air. She could do things that most people couldn't do. Maybe my skill set goes to that. But then I'm thinking to myself, I can't do a handstand. I can't do like a backflip. I'm not willing to put myself through a balance beam routine where I'm supposed to flip myself and then land on this, you know, what is it? Like half a foot wide beam, like, that just seems dangerous.
Oh, it's not half a feet. Oh no, it's much. It's like, much narrower than that. But yes, continue.
Okay, so I thought to myself, what about rhythmic gymnastics? Right. I mean, it's a sport, and I'm not going to diss the sport, but I'm thinking to myself in terms of ability and training and what would go into it and least harm for my body. And so I thought, if I could do a floor routine. I could train for a floor routine artistically. I think I could, you know, get someone to teach me to do that and how to move my body in certain ways. And I think that that's something that could be like a realistic I could train for.
So I think you're thinking of Will Ferrell in Old School waving a ribbon around and jumping around a mat. That's what I think you're thinking of, because I don't know if you have watched any rhythmic gymnastics. Like, did you go
watch? They're incredible.
Yeah, so we're talking about, yeah, there's the artistic side where sometimes you're using a ball or sometimes you're using a hoop and you're tossing it up in the air and catching it. But when you toss it up in the air and catch it, Karen, you've got to be able to do like a handstand and catch it with your feet.
I know, and I understand that. Like, it would be a lot of work. I do understand a lot of work. And hey, one of my best girlfriends back home in Winnipeg, she is a rhythmic gymnastic alum, shall we say. She never went to the Olympics, but she's an alum. She teaches it. She understands how, you know, physically fit you have to be and talented and artistic in terms. I just am looking at what I'm limited in physically and what I think I could translate to. Again, I would have to work on touching my toes. That's something that may have to happen. But I think I could get there.
That seems like a prerequisite. Yeah, I don't know when they evaluate people for the job, but that does seem like a prerequisite to me that you should be able to at least touch your toes in terms of flexibility.
Again, like, there's training that's going to be involved, okay? Like, there's training that's going to be involved. My flexibility, I would work on it daily, obviously, for a few hours of the day. I would work on my strength, obviously. There'd be a lot of upper body strength that needs to be worked on right now. So, got my lower body's pretty decent because I do ride the bike and the Peloton, so I'm okay with that. But it's more of a finding a sport where you think you could succeed at. And I think that was one where I could translate to.
So, our texter has gone the direction that you should have gone, in my opinion. I don't want to crush your dream. If you want to go the rhythmic gymnastics route, go ahead. But you got to be an athlete, and you got to be really flexible, and you got to be really strong. Like, so that's a long way to go for most of us who have no idea what it's actually like.
So now I'm not an athlete. Okay, thanks, Scott.
I'm saying right now the fact that you can't touch your toes is a little bit of a problem.
Can you touch your toes?
Yes, I can touch my toes, and I still am not going to pursue rhythmic gymnastics because I think what you need to do is get into something that's more of a skill as opposed to an athletic endeavor. Like, there are sports in the Olympics, both summer and winter, that are more skill-based than they are athletic-based. So an example of that would be archery. I'm not saying that all of a sudden you're going to become a world-class archer, but that's a skill. Like, you don't have to be the most incredible athlete to be an archer. You have to be extremely skilled. To be a curler, you don't have to be an incredible athlete.
Oh, you do now.
No, you don't. You have to be incredibly skilled. You have to be incredibly skilled.
Have you not seen them, Scott? Come on. They are so fit now, it's ridiculous because the game has changed. I'm going to back curlers here.
You have to be an incredible athlete to be a curler. You have to be incredibly skilled. You can be very fit and an excellent athlete and be a curler, but you don't have to be. That's the difference. I think you need to take on something that is more skill-based. Like, someone said this, and this is what I'm talking about. My cousin Mark Lynch, probably 5 years ago, did an introduction to skeleton seminar, decided he liked it, wanted to make a go. He's on the Canadian World Cup team now, so hell yeah, give it a go. Again, you have to be very skilled at skeleton.
You have to have a no fear mentality, and I don't have that. There's no way I could do a skill. Crossing that one off the list of things to do.
So I think if you take the two things you've admitted to here, like the no fear component, which is going to cross off things like ski jumping, skeleton, luge, all of those things, and I can't touch my toes, you're not left with much, Karen. You're really not left with much here.
You know what? This one actually kind of makes sense, and I think it's a good one. It says, give me the third man spot on the four-man bobsled team. Again, like, you're in the middle. I mean, obviously you have to be strong to get that push off, but you're not driving. You're not in the fourth spot, which is that last final push. And basically, so you're kind of protected, too, in the middle if you crash, I think. I could go with that one.
Boy, do you have to be powerful. Like, the amount of power you have to be able to generate.
But at least it's four-man, so at least, you know, you could also rely on other people to help you generate that power.
Someone is suggesting rhythmic drink handling.
Yeah. I mean, so we're going to try and do rhythmic gymnastics in a way that we don't drop the drink. That could be an interesting. Speed walking. That's more difficult, though, Scott, than it looks, because the rules of not being able to have your feet off the ground or both feet off the ground or however it is, it's a weird walking thing. I'm just adding to my thing. I was going to say I have a sore back. So I'm just adding to the fact that I shouldn't be doing any sport whatsoever.
I have a sore back. I cannot touch my toes. I have no experience in gymnastics, but I am going to take rhythmic gymnastics.
I do have experience as a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old. I do. Hmm. I have some experience. I know how to do, you know, some.
So it hasn't been that long?
No.
That makes sense.
Again, I was just putting it out there, and I'm not, I just want people to understand, like, they are incredible athletes. They are. I was looking at what my skill set is, how short I am, Scott, in terms of what sport I could be good at, because I'm short, I'm 5'4", like, I'm tiny, and thinking of what may or may not happen, and this is just what popped into mind.
I am willing to help coach you in curling or in archery. Outside of that, you're on your own.
Hey, Jamie, do you think I could get the whole rhythmic gymnastic thing down, or am I just shooting myself in the foot?
I think you're maybe biting off a little more than you can chew there with the rhythmic gymnastics. Yeah, archery was the first one that came to mind for me as well. I know in every sport in the Olympics, there's always more athleticism required than you think. So I'm not saying it would be easy to be an archer. I'm sure you still have to be in excellent shape. You have to work out certain muscles and all that. But just at first glance, looking at summer Olympic sports, that's probably the one that comes to mind, one that I might possibly have a prayer at.
See, I had the issue growing up doing archery in school where my elbow, like it, overflexion or whatever the term is, and the archery string, is that what we call it? When you pull it back, it would always hit my elbow. So I always had this huge, big like rash on my elbow and like scab because of the fact that the archery bow, string, whatever it's called, would hit my elbow. So I think I'm out of that one because of the injury issue.
Jesse is saying the Vancouver Curling Association is printing a Fire Scott banner as we speak because I said you don't have to be an incredible athlete to be a curler. You could be, but you don't have to be. That is the difference. It's a skill-based sport.
Equestrian, the horse has to be fit. Brandon from Coquitlam. Again,
the horse should get the medal. The horse should get the medal. I've always argued this.
Okay, so Jamie, what is one that you would do?
I like the equestrian. The equestrian suggestion is a good one, especially, what is it, dressage, where it's not even like you're doing jumps or whatever. It's kind of more the horse's styling out there. I feel like that, yeah, the horse dancing one, I think that's a good answer. I mean, again, obviously there's a lot of skill. You have to be fit and everything, and you have to have the relationship with the horse, but just in terms of raw athleticism, that's got to be pretty far down the list.
My favorite part of Karen's rationale for getting to rhythmic gymnastics is that, like, you have a reason that you can't do all of these other things. Ah, I'm scared of stuff, and I'm not. But you figured rhythmic gymnastics was not going to be a problem. That's what I love about the fact that you got there.
Looked at my skill set, looked at what I'm willing to do, willing not to do, and I thought, that's something that I'm willing to do. Just popped right in my brain.
I think you should chronicle this. I think we should have a weekly update on how you're doing in your pursuit of rhythmic gymnastics. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon, it's time for Take the L. Let's get into it.
Sometimes you just need to admit defeat and move on.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably. The lesson is, never try.
Loser! You're a loser! Are you feeling sorry for yourself? Well, you should be, because you are dirt!
Here's who needs to take the L.
All right, who's at the top? Who's at the top of the take the L list for you? I don't know if Jamie has one or not, but Karen, who's the top of the L for you?
Okay, so I had one that I'm going to save a little bit if we have time, but I'm going to take the L. Maybe I should take the L on the fact that I've just been talked out of doing rhythmic gymnastics and training for that from my coworkers and listeners, so that's fine. I'm going to take the L because maybe I had it all wrong. Like, maybe the NHL not suspending Tom Wilson was a good thing, Scott. And maybe they did it for this reason alone. Like, look at what's going on in the States right now. And what does the NHL desperately always want in the U.S.? They pine for more eyeballs. They want more attention. Like, they want to get more eyes on the sport. People talking about them. You know what story led the way yesterday on Around the Horn? It was either the first or second story. I think it was probably the second, but still, top segment. They talked about Tom Wilson, the fact he wasn't suspended. You know what story got as many clicks on ESPN yesterday? Greg Wyshynski's stain? His story. Like, that's the most clicks an NHL story has gotten on NHL coverage on ESPN. Emily Kaplan right now is on Outside the Lines talking about Tom Wilson not getting suspended. So you know what? Maybe I'm going to take the L. Maybe the NHL had it all right all along. They're like, we don't care about Tom Wilson and player safety, but we care about people paying attention to our league, and this is getting eyeballs in the States. It's getting coverage. We had it.
Nope. They didn't. That's like saying when Tim Peel was mic'd up and he said, I was looking to give these guys a penalty, that it was good for the NHL. They had a referee saying, I was going out of my way to look for a penalty on these guys, and that was good for the NHL. It's not.
Hey, it's got people talking about them, Scott. Like, isn't that all what the NHL wants in the United States, is to have more people talk about them, good or bad? Like, it's incredible the coverage that this is getting on platforms that don't usually give coverage to the NHL. That's all I'm saying. Like, the coverage that they're getting right now, and what's the term when it comes to the fact that, like, no press is bad press, or whatever the term that is, like, that saying? Like, they're just getting a ton of eyeballs right now that I don't think they would have had if, say, Tom Wilson got 3 or 5 games. It would have been just like swept under the rug in the U.S. market. They wouldn't have talked about it. Would have been the backstory on some sort of sports center if they got to it.
I am not an any press is good press believer. Bill Peters was not good press for the NHL. Everybody talked about that. ESPN had big headlines on that. The Bill Peters Hakeem Olu incident, not good press for the NHL.
I'm just saying this incident in general, Scott, like this just specific one. Maybe they knew what they were doing and I should take the L because, hey, people are watching, people are talking, and I want to see what the ratings are today for the New York and the Washington game. We'll see what happens there.
This one comes in. Aaron Rodgers should take the L. He needs to stop whining. Green Bay has a quality Super Bowl team. I see this as a tactic to get more money, says this unsigned texter.
Scott, can I just break in with some breaking news that maybe I think it's worth breaking in with? The New York Rangers have just fired John Davidson and Jeff Gorton.
Wow.
The New York Rangers have just fired president, and Jeff Gorton was their general manager, right? I'm not sure. I got to go back and look at this. They have just fired them. So here's what I'm looking at right here, Scott. Is this them going rogue, these guys, because they came up with a statement, and the ownership group is going, no, you can't do that to the NHL? Or is it the NHL putting pressure on the ownership for the Rangers? I don't think that statement goes out without ownership approval, but maybe because, Scott, it was so emotional that it didn't have the approval, and these guys are taking the fall.
That's certainly a possibility, Karen. Like, that's a reasonable speculation on your part. Maybe it has to do with the fact that the Rangers failed to qualify for the playoffs this year, that the plan they had in place with getting their last couple of draft picks, number 1 overall, number 2 overall, that those players haven't progressed to the point where a loaded Rangers team that went out and signed the likes of Artemi Panarin and saw Mika Zibanejad emerge as a 40-goal scorer, that they feel it's underachieved. Maybe it's all lumped together, but it's a pretty rational conclusion you've come to. Like, something that happened yesterday that is very much out of the norm causes something else to happen today that is very much out of the norm. Like, nobody at all, not Elliot Friedman, not Chris Johnson, not top insiders across this sport, have speculated that either of these men were in trouble in their positions in New York.
This is incredible.
That's big news.
I'm waiting to hear what the insiders do have to say on this, because it does strike me, Scott, as these guys are taking the fall from an ownership group that did not approve this. What do you got?
Perhaps it's the other way around. Perhaps it is tied to the statement. Here is one that comes in. Frank Saravelli works for the other network, very connected. Sources say that the Rangers president John Davidson and Jeff Gorton scurried to distance themselves from the team statement that was issued on Tuesday night, telling other executives they did not know it was in the works until after it was released. So perhaps it's actually, we don't agree with our bosses here. Elliot Friedman went on the air yesterday and said, like, knowing what I know about James Dolan, I have a feeling this came from ownership on down. He's got a ton of money. He's battled with the NHL before, and he's not afraid to take them on. Fine, be damned. And maybe after this gets put in public and Dolan says, yeah, this is what we're doing here, according to what Frank Saravelli is reporting from his sources, that perhaps Davidson and Gorton went, we shouldn't have done this to the NHL. We don't approve of this, and that they've been distancing themselves from that. Boy, is this, this is a major, major news. You're right to break into the segment. You want to talk about taking the L? Here's two people who have taken the L. It actually works for the segment. John Davidson and Jeff Gorton.
This is incredible, Scott. Like, I understand that, like, James Dolan has a very hair-trigger personality. We've seen him, like, ban beloved New York Knicks Charles Oakley from MSG because of something that he said or did. And, you know, he's willing to go against the fan base in that terms and be the bad guy. And we've seen him have any sort of hair trigger. But to think about the fact that you fire two guys because they dissented. Well, I guess you have the right. If you have dissenters in your organization, you want them to toe the company not line. Like, man, this is huge.
A couple of texts coming in. Not surprising. I wondered if we'd get them so fast. Both Adam in the Ridge and Steven East Van saying, John Davidson would be good in Vancouver. Could use him on the West Coast. Keep those texts coming in. 650, 650. 960-960. Just before we get to the end of the segment, I'll do a quick take the L. Man, this is a massive story that we will try to get into more in the 12 o'clock hour as well. We're going to talk some hockey prospects, but by notes and quotes, hopefully we have some more information for you that some of the insiders in the game have flushed this out more. My take the L this week was for some NFL insiders. Like, I thought you were trying to sell me some spin. I think you still were in terms of your take the L. That,
oh,
hey,
totally.
Maybe
yeah, totally.
The NHL. Yeah. Did you see what all these NFL insiders did this week? I shouldn't say all, but a bunch of them. A bunch of NFL insiders who last week on this day said 98% Mac Jones is going to San Francisco. Lock it up. That's the guy that's going there. They were proven wrong. And instead of just taking the L and say, you know what? I guess my information wasn't as good as I thought. Hats off to you. I take the L on this. Do you know what a number of them have done? A number of NFL insiders have said, the Niners were influenced by the media, and that's why they ended up selecting Trey Lance. Like, not only are they saying our information was right, they're actually saying it's the media at large that caused Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to select Trey Lance because of the backlash that was coming with our correct reports. Like, you want to talk far-fetched spin? That is far-fetched spin. Just take the L.
I didn't see that, Scott. Like, that's kind of embarrassing in terms of trying to spin your perception of what happened and not make you look good. Like, if you had any sort of sway over Kyle Shanahan and you had said that 98% they're taking Mac Jones, he would have taken Mac Jones, dude. Like, come on. So the fact that they're trying to trying to put it in a different sort of context, that's, I didn't see that, and that's definitely worthy of a take the L. Like, just admit you're wrong. Just admit you got it wrong.
Yeah, if you get it wrong, just say you got it wrong.
Take the L.
That's the whole segment. We will try to find out more on why John Davidson, Jeff Gorton took the L. We'll see what the insiders flush out. We're going to talk some hockey prospects as well. U18 is going on. Canada in a semifinal today. Which prospects have upped their draft stock in the eyes of Josh Bell from FC Hockey? He joins us next on Rintoul and Sermon. I knew we'd talk about the Rangers today. I just didn't think we'd talk about the Rangers like this today. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon, on the heels of breaking news that the New York Rangers have fired both John Davidson and Jeff Gorton within the past, what, 20, 25 minutes here?
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, my first speculation was the fact that I thought maybe they were fired because they put out the statement and ownership group didn't approve it and they were going rogue. And then we find out that there is some reporting on the fact that they didn't agree with ownership, and it was James Dolan that put it out, and they were dissenters, and they were kind of telling people that they didn't have anything to do with it across the league. And then this comes down from Elliot Friedman, among other, Darren Dreger has this as well. Friedman says, like many of you, I assume this had to do with the events of the past 48 hours. I don't believe Davidson Gorton had anything to do with last night's statement. It was Dolan driven. But then he goes on to say, there is word Dolan was unhappy with his New York Rangers season and wanted to make a change. Seems crazy to me, but they have come a long, long way in 2 years, but he's the owner to make this decision. It may have been the straw that had got them fired, the fact that they were dissenters, Scott, in terms of the fact that there was going to be a change at the end of the regular season. You know, Alexis Lafreniere, Kaapo Kakko, you've got Artemi Panarin. Like, there's been some expectations on this team, and I think expectations was that they could make a playoff run this year, and they should have been in the playoffs. So if you're James Dolan, you're looking at, okay, I'm not going to have the revenue of the postseason now. It's, again, we're missing out. Again, I lost money this year. Like, we need to change. Okay, fine, I see that. It does still strike me as odd that these two were dissenters against it, and all of a sudden they're just fired today.
That is one report, and that's from Frank Saravelli. There are other multiple reports. And again, depending on which sources you talk to, there are going to be certain things that are put out. I find it highly unlikely that the timing of this is in no way related to what has happened over the past 2 days. Whether it sped up this timeline, whether it's because there was some dissent among the two men who are now on the outside of the organization as to whether or not the Rangers should go after the NHL on this, maybe they were going to get fired next week. Maybe they were going to get fired 10 days from now. I find it highly unlikely that with 3 games to go in the regular season that this was part of the plan from ownership. These moves are generally not made with 3 games to go in the regular season, Karen. They are made...
No, they aren't.
After the season at this point. That's generally when they happen. Hey, If you want to do it now, it's your team. Do what you want.
So it's funny. I know we have a guest to get to, but Scott, just quickly. So we were saying before this news came down, before the break, that a lot of text the 650, 650. Davidson would be a good fit in Vancouver. Bring him here. Aquilini, let's do this. Calgary wants him too, Scott. Forget the Canucks. Bring JD home to the Flames. That's from Michael. And Davidson is a good old Calgary boy. We're putting in a waiver claim for him over the Canucks.
A lot of people clamoring for Davidson. Some others are saying, what about Jeff Gordon?
Built that team pretty well.
Also was part of the Boston Bruins management team 2011, and there are other fans pointing out, hold on a second, we already went down that road. Maybe that's not the direction to go if you're going to change management in Vancouver. Lots of your reaction coming up this hour. We'll see if we can get an insider on. Elliot Friedman and Chris Johnson, they are going to be very busy over the next little while, but we will do our best. We will take a turn to what lies ahead in the future. I don't know what it means for Jeff Gordon. I don't know what it means for John Davidson, but the future as far as the next wave of prospects is what we're going to discuss right now. Josh Bell of FC Hockey is covering the U18s. U18s, by the way, semifinals go today. Canada taking on Sweden, Russia taking on Finland. Josh, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for having me.
No problem whatsoever. And we do want to talk some prospects with you. As you know, in Vancouver and Calgary, there are some who are already eyeing the draft, maybe not in a way they thought they would at this point of the season. There's still a lot of debate out there, Josh, as to who's going to be the top pick in this year's draft. Of the candidates who are playing in this tournament, which one has helped his case the most as far as being selected number one overall goes?
I think that would be Brant Clark, playing on Team Canada, defender. He's been in the mix all season, top number one, first through top five, six. But all of the questions that have been coming up about his game over the year, he's kind of putting them to rest in this tournament. He just looks so good out there. He's been dominant for Team Canada and unquestionably one of their leaders.
So Brant Clark is one of the defensemen's name who gets thrown in there. Owen Power is another. He's not participating in this tournament. How do you compare the two of them personally?
I really like Clark a lot more. I think his offensive ceiling is much higher. Power is obviously the big defender, 6'6", and he can move as well. There are a little bit of questions about his defensive play. I can see Power going first just because of that size, but Clark is just such an exciting player.
A lot of focus on defensemen at the top of the board, but one of the forwards, especially of Canadian descent, that's getting a lot of attention, Shane Wright, he's playing in this tournament for Canada as well. Where does he stack up with other forwards who are toward the top of this draft class?
I think Wright is head and shoulders above. He's just been so good in this tournament. Obviously, he's only played the three games, but he's been dominant. He had the hat trick in his first game. He missed the next two just for precautionary reasons. He came back in and got two more. He's probably going to be the number one pick in 2022, and rightfully so.
Dylan Gunther obviously up there as well for the Edmonton Oil Kings. He's considered a top prospect in this draft as well. What does he do well, and what can he bring to the NHL?
He's a very good, well-rounded prospect. He brings his size. He's got the wicked shot. And we've seen all tournament how he can create offense. He had two goals in the last game. He's just chipping in however he can. And obviously this team is stacked top to bottom. So to stand out is pretty impressive, and to be a guy that they can lean on in any situation. He's very much in that mix of the top forwards of this class. Bob McKenzie as well talked about the possibility of him being a first overall if the team is looking for a forward, and I don't think he's hurt that case at all in this tournament.
Mason McTavish is another name. He's one of the players leading the way for Canada. Now, he played part of this year in Switzerland because, of course, he's from the OHL, and they're not playing this year. How important has this tournament been for his draft stock?
Yeah, for McTavish and all of these guys that traveled overseas, and obviously the ones that didn't play at all, this is huge. So we get to see them on the same ice surface. We get to kind of compare them at the same level. And obviously when they're playing over in Europe, they're playing in different leagues. They're playing against men, some against other junior players. So it's kind of hard to compare. But I think especially with McTavish, we've really seen how good he is compared to his peers. He's a guy who I think if we did have an OHL season, he might crack into that top 10. Most of the season he's been just on the outskirts, but if he can continue this into the semifinals, the gold medal, his performance, I think he could still crack that top 10. It's just great to actually see these guys on that level playing field.
Josh Bell of FC Hockey, he has his eye on the U18s. Couple of semifinals going today, gold medal game tomorrow. We're projecting draft picks for this year and beyond with him here on Rintoul and Sermon. I got a little ahead of myself a minute ago with Shane Wright, so I'm going to do it again and go to the class actually beyond his, because there's a couple of double underagers in this tournament that have been the buzz of the tourney to a certain extent. A lot of our listeners have heard of Connor Bedard, especially because he plays in Western Canada and he's a North Vancouver product. Who is Matvei Michkov, and why should hockey fans be paying attention to him?
What a tournament he's having. Michkov is a Russian player. He's a little bit older than Bedard, but they're both eligible for the 23 draft. Playing in the MHL this season in Russia, the Junior League, he broke Nikita Kucherov's scoring record for a U17 player. And coming into this tournament, he's just continued that. And he's got his eyes on Alexander Ovechkin's goal-scoring record. He's got 10 already in this tournament, and the way he's potted these goals has been just fantastic to watch. He's got a lacrosse goal, a between-the-legs goal, a hat trick, and two goals another game. And the fact that he's one of the youngest players in the tournament and he's doing that is just so fun to watch, so exciting, and it's definitely helping the hype for 2023.
And with Connor Bedard, what was your expectation of him coming into this tournament, and how has he performed relative to that?
Being the youngest player in this tournament, I kind of thought that he would sit on the bottom couple lines and just get the experience of the international game. This is his first time with Team Canada. But he's proving me wrong. He's done even better. He's hopped up into the top six, especially when Wright was out for the two games. He's contributing at both ends of the ice. He had the 5-point night in the quarterfinal. But just how he's being used, especially how the coaching staff is relying on him. There's been a couple games where he was playing every second shift, which is just so impressive for a young player on this Canadian team to stand out like that and be relied on by the team so much.
Josh, I want to go a little bit back to Russia because their goaltender, Sergei Ivanov, is having a pretty great tournament. And we know the quality of goalies that have been coming out of Russia as of late, that goalie factory, we could call it. Now, he's only 5'11", and I understand, you know, his age plays a factor and maybe he still can grow a bit, but NHL teams don't tend to go with the small goalie route as much anymore. Is he making scouts think twice?
I think he's a guy that could get picked. I don't think he'll be in the top half of the draft, but he's had a very good tournament, arguably the goaltender of the tournament so far. So he's definitely standing out. But yeah, with his size and just with his regular season, I can't see him being a top goaltender, but he's definitely got some draft consideration.
Let's look a little bit about Finland. They've got some heavy talent up front. How much of guys like, okay, I'm going to try and get these names out for you, Samu Tuomala and Ville Koivunen improved their stock? Because most had them kind of rated second-round picks on a lot of lists coming into this tournament.
Yeah, I think they've helped their case in big ways. Tuomala especially, he's been absolutely clutch for the Finnish team. They had a couple big comebacks in this tournament, and he was leading the charge in both of them, potting game-tying and game-winning goals. And Koivunen has been associated with most of those points as well. They're absolutely buzzing on the ice. And if Finland has a chance against Russia later tonight, I think they'll be very heavily involved. They've been very exciting for Finland. Definitely a couple of the best players in this tournament overall.
A couple more minutes with Josh Bell of FC Hockey. U18s wrapping up in the next couple of days. Draft not that far away. There's going to be a lot of attention on some of the top prospects. Josh, I don't get the sense that many people came into this tournament expecting much from Belarus. But one player in particular on that team has opened a lot of eyes. Who is he? What has he done? And to what extent has his stock risen?
Yeah, Danila Klimovich is a name that not many people knew heading into the tournament. Even on the broadcast for the game, you can hear scouts asking who this guy is. But he came in with a bang. He got the lone goal for Belarus against Sweden. Then the next game, he came out with a hat trick and followed that up with two more goals. This guy, he's just got a wicked shot, and he's put it on display in this tournament. And his ability just to slip behind defenders, find that open ice, and really surprise teams. I think all of his goals came on the power play, but he's definitely helping his draft stock. We're from a guy who kind of came out of nowhere. He's getting some buzz that he might get picked now.
Okay, so we've got Finland, Russia, one semifinal today. Of course, Canada, Sweden. The last time we saw these two teams play, it was a 12-1 shellacking by Canada in the round robin. But Sweden came back and they beat the U.S. 5-2 in the quarterfinal. What does Sweden need to do tonight to give Canada a bit more of a test than their first time around?
Yeah, through the tournament, Sweden definitely has improved. That game against Canada was obviously pretty rough for them. If they can keep going how they were against the U.S. and keep them on their heels, they might have a chance here. Fabian Lazell has been the star for Sweden, game in and game out. Even in the rough games, he's looked very, very good. So I think against Canada, he's definitely a guy that would they need to watch out for. But as long as they can kind of get set and they continue that game that they played against the U.S., then I think this could be a much more interesting game than we saw the first time around.
Two more quick ones for me. One, Luke Hughes. We know about the other two brothers. They're currently playing the National Hockey League. Listeners on the west coast of Canada, because of the Quinn Hughes connection, are very interested in how he projects as an NHLer.
Yeah, so right now for SC Hockey, Luke Hughes is our number one guy. He's one of the younger players in this draft class. He's just 6 days away from the 2022 NHL draft. But what he's done this season, I think he's probably one of the most improved players through the year. And he's got the skating ability. He's got the offensive ability. There are a couple questions about his play in his own end, but that will develop out over time, of course. So I think he could be a top line defender at the next level. And it would have been great to see him in this tournament. Too bad he was hurt. He got the cut by a skate, but he's done all he can to help his draft stock so far in this year.
Last but certainly not least, I grew up in Kamloops, so if I don't ask about Logan Stankoven, I will be persona non grata in my hometown. What have you seen from the Kamloops native on the world stage, and perhaps has he hopefully caused his draft stock to rise?
I think so. I think there's obviously some questions about him just because of his size. He's a bit of a smaller guy at 5'8", but if this tournament has proven anything, it's that does not matter for Stankoven. He's out there and he's contributing every shift. He never takes his foot off the gas. And I think he's been one of Canada's best players. He's digging in corners. There was earlier in the tournament, he took on three guys in the corner and he came out with the puck and he was killing penalties. He does everything that the team needs him to do. And he's just so effective.
I'm still reeling from the fact that 5'8 is small, but I digress. Hey, Josh, thank you very much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the tournament and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
That is Josh Bell of FC Hockey, obviously all over this tournament. And there's underagers, there's double underagers. And partially because of that curve that you grade on, they end up getting even more attention because they're playing a little bit ahead of their peer group. And in the case of, you know, Michkov, the young Russian, Connor Bedard, Shane Wright, depending on what draft class we're talking about, like those guys are going to get their tires pumped even more, and it does lead to that much pressure coming on them in years ahead. They've all handled it extremely well. Like Shane Wright was an underager in the OHL. We've seen what Connor Bedard has done in limited time with Regina this year, and the first ever underager. He's the first ever exceptional player. Yeah, you're allowed to play the full season at the age of 15. Nobody else in WHL history's been able to do this. And this Matvei Michkov, like he's taken a run at a record held by Ovechkin and Cole Caulfield in this tournament. He's four goals away. Ovechkin did his U17. Cole Caulfield did not. But this kid has 10 goals already in this tournament. He's playing as a double underager.
And I believe there's some record, Scott. I can't pick it out of my brain right now. You might be able to recall it better than me, but Connor Bedard is chasing down a Connor McDavid record, and whenever Connor McDavid's mentioned in the same breath, I mean, you know the kid is special. We got some more breaking news, though, coming out of the Big Apple. Life is moving quickly, Scott, in terms of what is happening with the New York Rangers. Those that have just tuned in, of course, John Davidson, Jeff Gorton, general manager and president there, respectively, have been fired by they've been fired. And as quickly as that happens, well, Chris Drury, who was an AGM there, has now been promoted to president hockey ops and the general manager. So we've got two out, one person taking over the dual roles as for now. Apparently, according to Emily Kaplan with ESPN, Drury was very highly thought of around the league and had been offered general manager jobs but had turned them down. So in terms of, I don't think he maybe knew this was coming, but maybe there was some sort of path for him to be the general manager with the Rangers. Maybe he did have some insight from what was going to happen. So things are moving fast in the Big Apple.
There's a couple of things here. One, Chris Drury was wanted by the Pittsburgh Penguins to interview for that job, and the Rangers said, maybe not. And Chris Drury more appropriately said, maybe not. So what you just laid out in terms of the pathway for him being GM, who knows what indication he was given at that point, but whether it's ownership, wherever in the organization, maybe it was John Davidson saying, look, you're going to be a big part of this front office for years to come. Just don't jump at any opportunity. Maybe it was ownership that went to Chris Drury and said, hey, we think really highly of you. These guys are on thinner ice than you thought. The timing not being affected by what happened this week and the statement that came out, I have a hard time buying it. Like there, and we're going to talk to Chris Johnson. Great job by Jamie. He's been able to track down CJ. So one of the top insiders in the NHL is going to join us in 10 minutes time. And we'll get more from Chris Johnson on this situation. The season's over in a week. The season's over in a week.
Three games they have left. Three games, Scott.
If this was your plan to make this move, that's when you were going to make it. And to suggest that it wasn't expedited by what's happened in the last 48 hours, I find implausible. I really do. I don't know how much it influenced it. I don't think that it's a lone incident. As I said to you last hour, we got the breaking news and we were speculating, hey, what might this have been from? I don't think having internal disagreement about whether or not to put out a blast on the league is going to be the lone thing that gets you gonged from your job. I really don't. It could, but boy, does that speak to irrationality. And hey, we can go down that road with James Dolan if you want, but on the hockey side, he's been far less that way than he has on the basketball side.
It's funny because he's always allowed what he allowed Glenn Slather to do what he wants to do. Scott, he kind of allowed the Rangers organization to be a separate entity, right? Like he didn't step in as he has with the New York Knicks. I mean, there's one thing that we've learned with James Dolan. He doesn't like when people talk out about him. Doesn't like fans booing at him. He doesn't like Charles Oakley saying things against him. And you know what happens when you say things against James Dolan? You get banned from MSG. Basically, that's what happened. So apparently, if you say things against James Dolan, even if it's not in the public sphere, Scott, but it's in the sphere that it's getting out there in the hockey world, and reporters could start to maybe get a whiff of this. Obviously, they have already got a whiff of this. James Dolan's like, no. Like, dude, I don't want anyone who says something against me. I made this statement against the league, and you're going to say something against me, you're out the door. It doesn't surprise me the brashness of James Dolan making this move in terms of he didn't like what somebody did, so they're out. But it does surprise me it comes with the Rangers.
As opposed to the basketball side of the operation. And to tie a whole bunch of thoughts together here, what did we hear from Ron Francis earlier this week? Ron Francis went on NHL Network, hasn't hired a head coach, and Ron Francis said, well, things can happen here in the next few weeks. We plan to hire a coach by the end of the second quarter, which is basically where June turns into July, somewhere in and around there. But we kind of want to see what's out there. Like, there are coaches that might not be in the jobs they currently have, and we want to see what the field looks like. We haven't settled on someone. All of a sudden, there's a general manager out of a job that many people didn't expect to be out of a job. There's a president out of a job that many people didn't expect to be out of a job. That is going to fuel speculation. That is going to cause ownership groups around the National Hockey League to say, okay, is either of these people an upgrade on what we currently have?
Well, there's people in both markets of Calgary and Vancouver that agree with that statement, Scott. Not just the question, but they agree with it. The texts have come in from both sides saying, like, we would love him here in Calgary. Aquilini, this landed in your lap. Like, the decision has been made. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't think any of them are going to come at a cheap price. Like, I think John Davidson is pretty highly regarded in terms of the quality that he's had in an NHL front office job. So he's going to come with a price. And if you fire somebody, you got to pay out their salary and all this kind of things that go with it. So I think there is that aspect. But do I think that John Davidson would be someone that I'd look at running my organization, especially in terms of a president's role, Scott? What is the one thing that we have said, at least in the Vancouver market, in terms of what they're lacking? And that's oversight. Not from the ownership, but from a president of hockey ops. Like, maybe Jim Benning has too many titles on his belt or on his shoulders right now. So it'd be interesting to see what happens, but I do know that John Davidson is very well respected in what he did in St. Louis and what he did with the Rangers.
There are people in Calgary who've been asking for this for that organization as well since Brian Burke left that role, saying,
you need to have someone.
Maybe we should have somebody there. Maybe it should be another step between ownership and somebody to handle things, as you just suggested, Karen, that don't need to be on a general manager's plate. We'll talk to Chris Johnson here in just over 5 minutes' time. I would like to tell you this, though, that you could be the envy of the neighborhood. Craftsman and Sportsnet are teaming up to give one lucky winner the chance to win $20,000 in cash and Craftsman tools and storage to create your own dream garage. To enter for your chance to win the Craftsman Dream Garage contest, visit sportsnet.ca/craftsman. Enter weekly to increase your chances. No purchase is necessary. Contest ends June 20th, 2021. See full rules for details. Craftsman tools are available at Lowe's and Rona stores across Canada and amazon.ca. Chris Johnson on the breaking news of the day when we return on Rintoul and Sermon. Jeff Gorton, John Davidson, both out in New York. Chris Drury appointed to general manager and president of that organization. Obviously, this is massive news that nobody was expecting this week. At least I don't think so. We'll ask CJ here in just a minute, Karen.
No, I wasn't expecting it. I literally went to Elliot Friedman's Twitter handle, Scott, and I clicked on it to make sure it was a blue check mark. There was no weird spelling in his name because you know how that happens come NHL trade deadline or free agency. You know, you get the spam Twitter accounts out there. So, no, like, I literally had to read it over 3 or 4 times before I came to you and said, I think we got breaking news that we need to break in because I was shocked.
I hope we do a verified thing like that on the phone. I hope I am welcoming marathoner for COVID relief and NHL insider Chris Johnson to the program, not just some dude named Chris Johnson. CJ, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. You got the real guy, and Karen had the real Elliot Friedman there, so all is well today.
Not for a couple of people in New York named Jeff Gorton and John Davidson. Was there even a whiff of something like this happening prior to this news breaking today?
I would say no. I mean, it's no secret. You know, it's funny, we can break this sort of conversation into a few parts, but it was no secret that Chris Drury was someone who was on the rise in that organization. You know, he sort of resisted to interview for a few other jobs that he probably could have got the GM's job elsewhere. And so, you know, I'm not surprised to see his stature grow, but, you know, certainly given especially what's happened in the last 48 hours, you know, there's no sense that this sweeping of a change would come. And, you know, as best as I could tell right now, it's related to the statement, but not. It's related in the sense that yesterday was a pretty emotional day inside that organization. You know, James Dolan, the owner, was very involved in the statement that ended up going out. I don't think that Jeff Gorton or John Davidson were all that involved. And I think it maybe exposed some fissures that had already, you know, some cracks that had already started to form there. And, you know, James Dolan, if anyone who follows the comings and goings of the Knicks will know that he's can be a bit of an erratic owner. And, you know, ultimately those two guys paid the price and he's going a different direction.
Fair to say that the timing of what's happened with the Tom Wilson situation had some influence on what we've seen today, though it's not the sole reason for the dismissals?
Yeah, I do think that's fair. As I sort of point out, I think that a lot of stuff was going on behind the scenes, you know, ever since that incident on Monday night. I think, you know, generally speaking, there's a bit of impatience in the ownership suite with the Rangers, you know, which is kind of interesting for those of us on the outside or from afar, because, you know, what I see there is a team that you know, recruited Artemi Panarin, you know, a pretty high profile free agent, has made some high picks in the draft, you know, made a great trade to get Adam Fox, for example, on their blue line. It was going to get some Norris or trophy buzz, if not win that trophy this year. I mean, they appear to be going in the right direction, but they're also headed for their third straight year out of the playoffs. You know, we're not going to count them appearing in the 2014 expanded playoffs last summer and that. And so, you know, I think that Dolan didn't like kind of the general direction of things and maybe wasn't as aligned with the president and general manager as he was with Chris Drury. And so, you know, I don't think the incident or the statement in and of itself led to the change. I think it did sort of accentuate that there maybe was not a united front office there with the owner's vision. And so this is all kind of bubbled to the surface here, you know, with the events of the week.
So I was surprised by this, CJ, because of the fact, like, at least my belief from the outside was, like, Dolan viewed the Knicks as kind of his toy a bit. Like, we've seen everything he's done meddling with that organization over the past years, from fans, you know, throwing former players, beloved players out of MSG and banning them. But he's kind of left the Rangers to just be themselves, a separate entity where he doesn't meddle as much. So, again, is it at this point where he's just seen the Knicks are kind of starting to be good again, and now the Rangers are the organization that kind of seems to be, I don't know, blowing in the wind a little bit, but not up to expectations where he thought they would be.
Yeah, I think that that's all plausible. I mean, you know, you're right. His influence has kind of not been at the forefront of Rangers coverage or discussion, you know, really for years, as far as I can tell. And, you know, I think that this year he did expect more from the team, and right from the beginning, they had a very slow start and, you know, some lopsided losses, and, you know, it just was a tough season. They've actually played reasonably well and kind of got back to the fringes of the playoff position until the last few weeks. But, you know, they're a young team, and we're throwing a lot of players into their spot. And maybe just, you know, this was the first time that you know, he expected more from them, and that's led to it. Or maybe, you know, maybe it's also that there was this looming decision here with Chris Drury, because, you know, other teams certainly had come calling for him, Pittsburgh, you know, Florida as well, and their recent GM hirings, you know, inside these last few months. And so, you know, something was going to come to a head where they were either going to have to let him go or find a way to promote him internally. And you know, I think it's reasonable to assume he's got maybe a different take on how the team is, you know, why it hasn't been able to take that next step. You know, some of this could just be bad timing, honestly. I think when you have an owner who expects results every moment and can't be patient, I mean, it's going to lead to firings, and that's happened a lot. There's been a lot more instability on the Knicks side of things, and it's finally come to the Rangers here.
And Chris, how did the league react to have you talked to anybody within the league, and how the reaction to the statement by the Rangers yesterday?
Well, it got everyone's attention. I mean, much like it did for those of us who saw it on Twitter last night. I mean, I think that the league views it a couple ways. You know, they understand that whenever they make decisions in the Department of Player Safety around suspensions or plays they choose not to issue a suspension, that there's going to be there's going to be upset people on the other side of that decision. You can't make everyone happy with those kind of judgment calls. So I think that they can accept a degree of criticism. You know, I think where the league had some issue was that, you know, George Parros's name was identified directly and, you know, sort of questioned whether he was fit to do his job as the head of the Department of Player Safety. And, you know, I do know from speaking to a few people at the league level that they didn't appreciate, you know, sort of the personal attack that was levied as part of that. You know, I suspect here that some kind of fine has been levied, will be levied behind the scenes to the Rangers because of that. Although, you know, typically those things are handled in private by the NHL, so we may never ultimately find out, you know, what the sort of punishment was, you know, for that. But, you know, I think on one hand they can take being criticized. They understand that people aren't going to be happy. But on the other, that there's a way to do it or, you know, that there's a certain amount that they'll tolerate without responding. And I think that the Rangers were viewed to have crossed the line from the NHL's perspective with that one.
Chris Johnson joining us here today on Rinto and Sermon on the heels of the news out of New York that both John Davidson and Jeff Gorton have been dismissed by the New York Rangers. I'm not saying that all of a sudden there's a LinkedIn or Indeed offering for jobs all of a sudden, but these are two men in this game who have big reputations. How coveted will either or both be around the National Hockey League?
Well, you know, I think just because of his age, Jeff Gorton will probably be the more likely to resurface with another team, you know, being younger. And again, it's one of these ones. It's a little like Ron Hextall. I mean, part of the reason Ron Hextall lost his job in Philadelphia was because, you know, he put together a team with a lot of young prospects, was being sort of patient, and I think that there was impatience above him. But, you know, the wider hockey world liked a lot of what he had done, and ultimately, of course, he's resurface with the Pittsburgh Penguins now. I think Jeff Gorton will be viewed similarly, where maybe within the walls, you know, the turnaround, the rebuild didn't unfold quick enough for ownership. But, you know, I haven't seen too many people or heard of too many people that you know, haven't kind of liked the way he approached things these last couple of years. So, you know, I think that he'll be rather coveted. I think in the case of John Davidson, you know, this was sort of a dream job, right? He walked away from a similar position with the Columbus Blue Jackets 2 years ago to sort of quote unquote go home, you know, with an organization where he played once upon a time as a goaltender, was a longtime broadcaster, you know, for Ranger games. I think this was sort of a, you know, a real spot for him. You know, I haven't spoken to him since this news broke or anything like that, but, you know, I could see him being more likely to sort of ease into retirement after this, you know, this experience rather than be jumping back. Although, you know, someone with his level of experience will probably always have, you know, a senior leadership type of role if he wants to fill one, even just as, you know, kind of, you know, someone who comes in and is a bit of a mentorship. You know, Cliff Fletcher, for example, veteran, is still around the Maple Leafs. We do see that, you know, around the league. But, you know, I think Jeff Gordon's more likely to end up being a GM again, whereas John Davidson will you know, have to decide if he still wants to work or not, because I'm sure he's earned enough money that he doesn't have to.
So this happens in Eastern New York, where obviously things just weren't up to snuff as far as expectations go. At least that's part of the understanding here. In Western New York, there's Buffalo, where things have not gone well for quite some time, and we know change is coming. Jack Eichel, when his name got put out there a few months ago, and it's going to come up again, the Rangers are one of the teams that looks like they have the prospects and the capital to at least potentially make a deal like that happen. Does this all of a sudden add more fuel to that?
I think that's fair, that it would. I mean, look, if Jack Eichel's moved, which is still an if, you know, I don't know that everything is totally, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion that he'll be traded, but certainly it's, you know, those discussions have been had. I think the Sabres are, you know, have explored the market a little bit and they've at least opened their minds to the possibility. And you know, the interesting thing with Eichel is he's got a, you know, connection from his college days with David Quinn, the coach of the Rangers. You know, I would suggest that David Quinn's future is at least somewhat up in the air here, you know, where things fall for him. If Chris Drury believes he's best kept on, you know, he is under contract two more seasons, I believe, beyond this one. But, you know, if he stays, the fit's probably there. You know, I think the LA Kings could be a team to watch for Eichel as well. I mean, let's face it, if he truly is on the market, there'll be even teams that we're not contemplating that I think might do something just because he's, you know, still a pretty young player. You know, he's under 25, you know, among the best young players in the game. And while he's coming off a tough injury, and I don't know the status of his recovery, you know, it's safe to say that there would be other teams that would step up. But I think the Rangers, you know, would be a fit, and it would sort of fit with the idea here that there's a bit of impatience with the Rangers' approach, that they need to take a step, that they need to be a playoff team, that they need to start trending towards being a cup contender. And, you know, that might be a way to accelerate things, adding that sort of impact player to a roster that already features, you know, Zibanejad and Panarin and some young guys too.
James Dolan obviously accelerated things in New York. I don't think this was expected today, but we are a couple of weeks out from the end of the regular season, assuming it gets played out all the way to its fullest extent with Calgary and Vancouver. Which situations are you most interested in to see whether or not there's going to be change at the president, management, or coaching level?
It's funny, I haven't totally dug into this one yet, and this is such a strange year. I think we might get some surprises, honestly, is my feel. I mean, it's crazy as it sounds. You wonder, you know, what might happen in Winnipeg, for example, with the way their season's sort of gone south here at such a crucial time of year, you know, losing seven games in a row, you know, potentially falling all the way back to the fourth seed in the division. You know, that could be an interesting one. You know, even a team like Carolina, it's at the other end of the spectrum, but the fact that they haven't retained their coach, Rod Brind'Amour, is, you know, such a, you know, longstanding member of that organization, but I think, you know, has earned a lot of attention for the way he's helped turn the Hurricanes around these last few seasons, you know, and that he works for an owner in Tom Dundon who is, you know, doesn't mind saying he does things differently. He doesn't believe in paying the market rate and those types of things. So, you know, I'm curious to see how that plays out, because as much as it seems like for sure, you know, someone like Rod Brind'Amour would stay in Raleigh, you know, if he becomes a free agent, you know, much like Travis Green could, you know, that shakes things up. I think it's going to be a pretty big offseason for job changes. You know, some of that's brought on just by the COVID event in general. Different organizations have been hit more severely by this financially, or maybe weren't as well equipped to handle the financial losses that have come from a season where you know, that was largely played without fans and without, you know, the ability to earn revenue. So, you know, I think all that's going to lead to a fair amount of upheaval in the job thing. And so, you know, I'm curious to see what happens in some of these Canadian markets, like the one you guys were speaking from, because I think the Canucks situation is intriguing. Winnipeg with Paul Maurice is interesting, and then Rod Brind'Amour as well, what he ends up doing.
CJ, awesome stuff, man. I know you built yourself for a marathon, and we called you on very short notice to do a sprint here. Thank you very much for doing this. Congrats on getting that extra bump for COVID relief as well, and thank you very much for your time today.
No problem. Talk soon.
Thanks, CJ.
That is Chris Johnson, regular across both Sportsnet 960 in Calgary and on the morning show in Vancouver on 650. Jumping in today with the news of the day. He mentions Travis Green there at the end. Vancouver has been a situation for a long time that people have been wondering what happens. Does it happen at the coaching level? Does it happen at the management level? Seattle, I talked about this last segment. Like, Seattle said, well, let's see what's out there. I do wonder if anything that's happened today in New York causes some organizations to at least reevaluate where they're at and whether or not they'd be better served by an upgrade.
Well, I think so completely, Scott. I do think, too, like, it's not like the Rangers' position is empty now and they have to go maybe steal somebody in terms of what Seattle maybe was looking for, I guess, of course, because Chris Drury's taking over in the role of president and general manager. Do I think this is something where Ron Francis looks at? Yes, I absolutely do. Do I think it's something that other organizations look at? I do. Carolina's an interesting situation because I don't see them being landing spots, obviously, because I think both of these – Jeff Gorton and at least Davidson as well would demand a bit higher salary. So I don't see that as being a fit, but it's going to be interesting to see because I think you've got these guys out here and Jeff Gorton did a fine job with that organization. They are what, 3 points out of a playoff spot. I understand they're eliminated, but Scott, in a season that's been this crazy, in a season where you're there with Pittsburgh and Washington and the Islanders are playing well in Boston, like they did an admirable job with a young team to get to where they were. So, I mean, obviously the winning was not there for James Dolan, if that's the case, and he was going to fire them anyways, and their descent made the firing quicker. But, man, oh, man, I agree with you. Like, I think this is going to be a situation where some organizations are going to go, wait, we weren't going to make a change, but we're going to think about something now.
Notes and quotes, we generally get to about 10 minutes earlier than this, Karen. It is a game day in the National Hockey League. There is some Canada-on-Canada competition, including in Calgary. Flames, oh, yeah. You guys got to play again every once in a while. One of only 2 games here this week. The next one doesn't go until Sunday. More focus probably on the visiting team than the home team right now. Not by Flames fans, but Winnipeg comes in having lost 7 straight, played really well against Ottawa, still didn't find a way to get the result they're looking for right now. They're teetering on the edge. Montreal's in action tonight against Ottawa. Who's sitting third tomorrow? I have no idea. The way things are trending, it's probably Montreal, but that's hockey, and it's the most unpredictable sport out there when it comes to trying to prognosticate from night to night.
It'll be interesting. Calgary's very well rested, Scott, so we'll see what they have. Obviously, Winnipeg's trying to right this ship. 7 in a row they've lost. This is their last road game of the season as well, so they're going to try and close out their season. Not going to try, but they're going to do it at home. So it'll be interesting to see what effort they put out there. Calgary, they are down to 3 in terms of tragic numbers. Same with the Vancouver Canucks. They are down to 3 in terms of when they will be eliminated from the playoffs. So a loss tonight, obviously, for Calgary. If you had any hopes of seeing where this could go, they'll take a major hit tonight if Winnipeg wins this one.
Yeah, it seems like in both Calgary and Vancouver, it's more about individual storylines. Hey, which player are we watching tonight? You know, with Vancouver in last night's game, for example, it was Jack Rathbone's debut, and he acquitted himself quite well, in fact. He looked pretty good out there for his first game. It was less about the result. It was more about, hey, which player are we watching? Who are we still trying to evaluate here? I get the sense that's where it would be for Flames fans. They're probably eager to get some AHL bodies into the lineup just to have a look more than anything else, a little something different down the stretch. But for Winnipeg, yeah, find a way to win. Montreal, find a way to win against an Ottawa team that has been quite good as of late. Zipping around the National Hockey League, Washington and the Rangers, now even more attention on this game seemingly than, well, we didn't think it could be any higher than it was because of what happened with Tom Wilson the other night. And now with 2 key members of the organization being fired and all of the attention of the statement yesterday, Tom Wilson playing again tonight. Man, this will be the game that everybody's talking about on both sides of the border.
Yeah, Scott, I haven't looked at the guide yet to see if Sportsnet is showing this game, but if they are, even if they aren't, I'm going to go check it out on Rogers Game Center because this is something I was going to check it out prior to because I wanted to see, was there going to be retribution? What is going to happen for Tom Wilson? What is, you know, are the Rangers going to go after one of their star players? Washington's also shorthanded. Like, what are they going to throw out there tonight, too? So it'll be interesting to see, but definitely now with the fact that basically Tom Wilson has taken out four New York Rangers in terms of how quickly they were gone. John Davidson, Jeff Corton, Artemi Panarin, and I guess you could add Buzanovich to that as well. So my eyes will be on there. I'm sure most of north of the border and south of the border will be as well.
Yeah, so there's some jockeying as far as Washington goes for seeding in the postseason tournament, but not much else on the line other than that storyline that we focused on so much over the past couple of days.
No Ovi. We said no Ovi. No Ovi for that one once again.
Yeah, he tried to get out there the other night. Didn't feel good. Left that game almost immediately. He will not play in this game tonight. Talk about a guy who's been so healthy over the course of his career, not able to add to that goal total here late in the season, but at this point, it's probably just about making sure he's right for the playoffs. Just make sure he's as healthy as possible when the big games roll around. Dallas at Tampa, Stars down to fumes, basically. Nashville odds on favorite to grab that final playoff spot. Nashville playing Columbus tonight. Hey, who are they going to scratch with Columbus? I think we're past that storyline, but it's always one that people mention. Nashville Predators, as I said, odds on favorite to grab that spot. Dallas playing Tampa, tough competition there. Lightning still trying to figure out where they're going to wash out in the mix between Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Tampa not getting anyone back tonight, Scott, but Steven Stamkos is back practicing with the team. I don't know which type of jersey he's wearing at this point, but at least he is back practicing. Of course, Nikita Kucherov is skating as well, coming back from that offseason hip surgery. So Tampa looking to get healthy in terms of making the playoffs. They're two games back of Florida in terms of second in the Central. And then Dallas, like you said, they've got one game in hand on Nashville, but they're 4 points back. They've kind of struggled a little bit lately, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But if Dallas, they need something, Scott, they need have any chance. They need to get a win tonight against Tampa Bay. Eyes that be interesting to keep this on this game, too. Vegas and, where am I going here? Sorry, I lost
Minnesota.
Vegas and Minnesota.
It's the final meeting of the season between these two teams, and Minnesota's won five straight.
Also, Marc-Andre Fleury, I believe he's starting, and one of our listeners texted in. He goes tonight. He's tied at 489. He's tied with Roberto Luongo for all-time wins by a goaltender. He wins tonight. He will jump third alone, Scott, third alone in goaltenders at 490. So something to keep an eye on. Marc-Andre Fleury could sit alone in third in all-time goalie wins list.
Yeah, that texter came with the assertion that Marc-Andre Fleury's career has not been covered very much. I disagree with that statement. I think we know a lot about Marc-Andre Fleury's career. You might think it doesn't get enough attention at this point, but we're talking about a guy who has won Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh. He's a number one overall draft pick. He falls out of favor because of Matt Murray, goes to Vegas, leads him to a Stanley Cup final, becomes the face of the franchise, gets a sword put through his back visually last year during a playoff run when he wasn't chosen as the goaltender. I feel like we've covered Marc-Andre Fleury a lot. And good for him. He's one of the, you know what, he's one of the most celebrated just personalities in the sport, like everybody loves the flower. I don't think he's been underreported, do you?
No, I don't. And I want to say kudos to Marc-Andre Fleury, because what he could have done this season, Scott, is they brought in his replacement and they tried to trade him. And because of his contract, they couldn't trade him. They were going to retain salary. They were trying to do everything that they could do to get him off their books. And they didn't. And guess what? Marc-Andre Fleury's putting up incredible numbers. Again, at this point, Scott, the storyline with Vegas is who are they going to start in the playoffs? Like, they have two really good goaltenders, and that's the issue that they have right now. Colorado, San Jose, I want to point this one out as well, because Colorado, yes, they're 2 points back of Vegas. They've got one game in hand. They are playing San Jose tonight. Of course, San Jose eliminated. But Scott, Alex Newhook, the Newfie originally from Newfoundland, Labrador, of course, played for the Grizzlies in the BCHL. He is making his NHL debut tonight for the Colorado Avalanche.
And they've been able to do that with a few players this year. Member of his draft class, also chosen in the first round, Bowen Byram, debuted earlier this year. Things not looking so good for him from a health perspective for this season. Don't think we're going to see Bowen Byram anymore. Alex Newhook, 15th overall pick in that draft. Hey, who's playing? Vegas, Minnesota, Colorado? Like, who has to take on one of the others in this mix? That division is up for grabs. By the way, Devon Toews going to join us tomorrow. The Abbotsford product, he's playing tonight in that game against San Jose. He'll be part of Alex Newhook's debut, and we will speak with the Avs defender tomorrow. Not much time to get into Anaheim, St. Louis, or L.A., Arizona. Fast and furious show. Thank you very much, Karen.
Yes. Yeah, it was fun. Breaking news and some controversy. I love it, Scott. Good show.
We'll be back tomorrow. We'll see what other fallout there is with the New York Rangers. Who knows? At this time tomorrow, we could be talking about bigger and better things with the New York Rangers. Enjoy the games tonight. We're going to turn things over to the big show in Calgary. Bick and the Boss coming up in Vancouver. Big ups to Art Factora jumping in for an ailing Greg Ballack, who we will hopefully have back with us tomorrow. Thank you, Jamie Dodd. You heard him briefly on the program today. Did a fine job of lining up this show and getting Chris Johnson on. Enjoy your Wednesday. We're over the hump. We're back tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.